What are you pretending not to know? And that, and it's one of those where it's like the way it's asked is like, dude, what am I pretending not to know? And then I look.
Dadgum.
So I ask myself those questions. What's not sustainable? What's not eternal? What am I pretending not to know? And then again, we talked about this earlier, but where is there a friction point in my life? And where am I trying to understand my way to peace instead of just receiving peace from Jesus? Name it. Share it so I'm not carrying it alone. So inviting people in. So like today when I had lunch with the CEO, he's like, how are you doing? And I just sit and think for a second and he's like, I already like your answer because you're not going to give me the BS. I'm doing fine.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Randy Griffin. He is a C-12 chair in North Texas who equips Christian CEOs and business owners to lead with clarity, conviction, and kingdom purpose. Look at that. There's two C's and a K. You're rocking it. With a background in ministry, real estate, and as a serial entrepreneur, he brings decades of leadership and marketplace experience to his forums. Randy is passionate about breaking down the sacred secular divide. Amen. And helping leaders align their businesses with God's purposes to fuel a marketplace revival. Welcome to the show, Randy.
Thank you. So happy to be here. I'm hoping I can mirror your energy, Kenny. So that's my goal.
Funny enough, I also hope I can mirror the energy I just exuded. So it may have just been like a quick burst, and then I'm just going to collapse into boringness. But I'm excited to have this conversation with you. Tell me today, what is on your mind?
Yeah, I love this question. I think as I'm sitting with a lot of CEOs, just had lunch with another one today, what I'm seeing is leaders are tired. They don't have margin on their calendar and they have no margin in their soul. They're producing results, but then they're quietly asking, does it really matter? Mm-hmm. So I believe we're in a season of, especially like with all that's happening on the world stage of, man, slowing down and listening again and really realigning ourselves. Like we all probably need this chiropractic adjustment of our souls, of recalibration of what's important, what matters, what's going to echo into eternity from the movie.
Look, I don't know why you chose violence towards me just to open up our podcast episode here. I don't appreciate it.
It's a, what is it called when you surprise someone with a come to Jesus meeting? So this is a surprise
rude
call for you.
It's called rude. Or as I call my coach, he's rudely insightful.
Yes, yes.
I needed to hear it, but I didn't want to. I think that's... All kidding aside, I mean, that deeply resonates. And you and I have talked in other just regular calls that weren't recorded. Maybe they were, but not for public consumption. This is something that is affecting more and more people. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about what is the prevailing wisdom, even amongst Christian executives and high achievers, performers, leaders, that's leading to this, I'm getting results, but it's costing me, and I love what you said about the no margin in my soul sort of thing. Like, what is the belief that's taking us into that place, either about ourselves or the way that work should be done?
Yeah, I think the prevailing wisdom, and I hear it all the time. It's funny how many people I sit down with and they've hired another somebody to come in and help them have a better program, a better system. Let's scale this. Let's optimize it. Let's go faster. Let's scale bigger. If you're burned out, just get better tools, better routines. Like we're always, it feels like that's how we're wired. In Christian circles, we baptize it in hustle and spiritual language, and we use excellence and stewardship. But man, honestly, it's all still rooted in performance. Like we're just performing. Mm. Even though we call it like sacred busyness, it's still busyness. And the message is do more, be more, fix yourself, get it together. And so, you know, Jesus. So this is Jesus, Matthew 11:28. He's like, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, learn from me, for I'm gentle and lowly at heart, and you'll find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And I think when we hear that, we're like, I don't know what a light and easy burden feels like, or a yoke feels like that.
Is it? So I'm about to get some free counseling coaching here, which is why anybody starts a podcast, right?
Totally.
There's a lot in what you just said to unpack. One, I'll try to keep it all in mind and go in order. But you talked about it's all a performance. And that's something growing up, born in the 80s, but really like child of the 90s, early 2000s, especially in church culture, Christian, evangelical Christian culture, the notion of, oh, it's not a performance and it's not this, you don't have to perform for Jesus. But then when you get out into the workplace, then you're talking and you're like, okay, yeah, I'm a human being, not a human doing. And that all sounds great.
Yeah.
But then you think, oh, yeah, but I got a high performance isn't a bad word. So it almost feels like a different ditch to steer in that so many of us have been fed. You say, oh, yeah, no performance, just no expectations, let go and let God. But at the same time, we can, I think high achievers, leaders feel this pull towards, no, but I have a vision for how this thing is done and done right and done well and consistently and what it creates. How do we start to reconcile that drive that so many, we'll focus on more the faith forward leaders mm-hmm. feel, but then on a Sunday or a Wednesday or a small group or something like that, they may be hearing like, you got to relax. And you're like, I don't know. That's what lazy people say.
Does not compute.
Yeah. And there may be a both and here, which I'm usually a fan of. But yeah, could you talk a little bit about how you've seen that maybe in your life or the lives of the guys you're coaching in C12? Like, how do they take the part of who they are and who, honestly, but in our faith, who God created us to be reconcile it with Matthew, like you just said, is mm-hmm. if you're a heavy burden, like, how do I trust God, but also apply myself to something that I feel God birthed in me? Because yeah. It feels like pulling. So I'll let you go from there.
Yeah, it's a great question, man, and probably a whole other podcast. I think I would boil it down like this. There's two operating systems in the world, and we may have talked about this before, but there's fear and there's faith, and the world's business economy mostly operates on fear. The stock market operates on fear. Everything operates on fear, but God's economy, the way he operates, is in faith, and so fear drives us to perform. Fear drives us. Most of the time we're doing something, we're operating out of this fear of, I'm not going to have enough, all mm-hmm. of those things. And so the verse that Jesus is talking about, he's not talking about, it is almost a fear and faith, like the burden that we carry, the yoke that we put on ourselves is fear, it's performance and all of that. And that's not how he wired us. Like, he created the earth, he put us in the earth, he put Adam and Eve in the garden. He said, tend the garden, work it. Like, we're here to work. We're here to produce. We're here mm-hmm. to do all of those things. But in that is a partnership with heaven. Jesus said to pray, his kingdom come, his will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Mm-hmm. So there's this blueprint in heaven that Jesus has said, I put my sons and daughters on the earth and I mm-hmm. want partnership. I want partnership with them. But we have this earthly system that operates in fear and lack, and I got to get what's mine. And especially in DFW and Texas, we have this Lone Star mentality, independent state, don't mess with Texas, this individual identity overthinking that we mm-hmm. get into and all of that. And Jesus is inviting us into partnership, into rest, into abiding, into take on a yoke that was specially created for us. And in that you will work, and in that you will do a lot, but it will give you energy and life and margin, versus the other side of that is you're just going to be dead. And everything you do, it's not fruit that remains, if that language makes sense. So I don't know if that helped or not, but.
No, it sounds like productivity in and of itself, it, like you said, is holy productivity. It is a good thing.
Yep.
And I think anything taken to an excess, and some people try to say, Jesus said everything in moderation. He never said that. He said, don't get drunk. But any strength can become a weakness.
Yeah.
I think that keeps us in check.
Yeah.
If you want to go all the Apostle Paul with the thorn in the side, there's a lot of discussions and I've heard about what that actually is, but that can be it, is like an overproduction of that. Like even in our bodies, like there's a homeostasis of different chemicals and different things. And if anything starts to overproduce, then it actually does make us sick.
Yep.
Same as if it underproduces.
Yep.
It needs to be like little bear's porridge, just right. There's a sharp left turn. So here's where, in full transparency, this is not coming from just, I had some conversations with folks. This is coming from me, but I know I'm special just like everyone else. What do you say to the men and women who say, okay, you know what, Randy, I hear you. Yeah, I do need to see this as a partnership with God. And you're talking about margin and, yeah, probably a little breathing room for my soul and my body would be good. But what if I really love the work I do?
Yeah.
My brain just fires on all cylinders. I'm energized by what I do. And when I come to the end of a day, I am righteously exhausted.
Yeah.
And that person, because again, this is the other side of, you can call it Christian culture, subculture, something like that, is I think work-life balance is I was going to use some stronger language. I don't think balance exists. I think you have moments of imbalance. Maybe if you take a really long view, I think it starts to balance out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know it, just from hearing some of your story and your past and the things you've achieved and done, like that takes time, that takes energy, that takes passion for the work. It doesn't happen. It's like, oh dear God, I hate this, but I'm gonna keep working 12 hours. So how do you start to navigate when, you know, you have men and women who say, yeah, that's great. I'm not looking to just work 40 hours and then pal around and just do family fun time and look like some cover of Family Life magazine. I don't feel like that doesn't light me up like it does some people.
Yeah.
But which is fine if you're not part of the Christian faith. But if you are, at least for me, I've taken on shame because I didn't want to just sit at home or around the campfire with the family and be husband and father. Do I treasure those positions? Absolutely, 100%. But I'd be lying if I said there aren't some times when I'm like, hey, like I love you guys with all my heart and I'm working my butt off for you. But I get a lot of energy and passion from this. And I also want you to see what it looks like to be passionate about work and serving others.
Yeah.
How do you start to reconcile those?
Man, you said a lot there.
Let me summarize it. You don't want balance. You don't want to be, you don't want balance. You actually like how much you work.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to change some pieces so that there's the mental, emotional margin.
Yeah.
But when everybody tells you, oh, you're supposed to, you got to cut back your hours and you got to spend time with family and you got to make time for this. And you're like, that actually doesn't even sound interesting to me.
Yeah.
But because we're in this Christian culture that says here's the things you're supposed to value and the ratio by which you're supposed to value them, if you're out of alignment with that, then suddenly you're some jack wagon who values work and productivity above everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, it's a good question. Again, it's like I'm a professional brisket smoker. And when someone says, how do you smoke your brisket? Like, it's
how long
not a... I will say this, there's no cookie cutter answer because all of God's children are different, but I will say the operating system in which he wired all of us and what we've all grown up in a performance-based society. Every school, every sporting event, and I'm not for participation trophies, but I'm just saying everything we've been measured by in our life is based off performance. And so our default, if we're an engine, our default rev speed is already too high. We have not sat in his presence and sat long enough to hear him and almost, if you could put your finger on the heartbeat of Jesus and be like, would you align my heartbeat with yours? Because right now it's at 140. My resting heart rate is 140. and I'm feeling like what I need to do is go perform and go do something because what gives me life and all of that. So we're trying to run and measure to that. And I think what the Lord is inviting us into is you Kenny 2.0, not trying to make Kenny 1.0. He's inviting you into something completely different, a whole new operating system. It's like when your iPhone says we're going to the next operating system, like you got to wipe the old one off, put the new one in. And a lot of us, again, I think the questions you're asking are still 1.0 when Jesus is inviting us to something completely different, a whole new way to look at life, a whole new partnership, a whole new level of productivity, a whole new level of peace. Most of us live in a world where our peace is so circumstantial. It's connected to our bank account. It's connected to how many problems we had throughout the day. And what Jesus is inviting us to, if we'll use like what just happened in Iran, we sent these bombers over, multiple massive bombs to get way underground. And the peace that Jesus is inviting us to is when the enemy sends out stealth bombers to bomb Kitty and his wife and his household, it doesn't matter what he does, the peace that Jesus offers us and that we get to live in, it can never penetrate what Jesus has offered and given us. Does that make sense?
Fundamentally, then, so many of at least the questions I'm asking right now, but I think well-meaning believers in the marketplace then are basing things on some assumptions that are faulty, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, wrong, yes.
It's not make 1.0 better. It's there's a fundamental shift.
Yeah.
And we would be asking totally different questions
if
we shifted. It's almost, I mentioned the book quite a lot, The 10X is Easier Than 2X by Dan Sullivan.
Yeah.
And in that, he talks about how like iteratively better is one thing, but 10X, you almost have to throw everything out because what you need to build to reach the 10X of whatever that is fundamentally different than what the 1.0 and 1.1, 1.2 sort of thing.
A little bit of my story. So I had to go through recovery and join the recovery community. And I'm still involved in that community. And I would say like what C12 is, and this is some internal language that we use, that it's AA for control freaks, because every CEO, every high level C-suite manager, you're control freaks. If you're not in control, you feel it's like an addict, and pick your drug. Alcohol, meth, coke, whatever it is, it's like walking into an AA or an NA meeting and saying, I still want this drug. I still want my control. Help me figure that out. And they're like, you can't have control. You have to give up complete control, because if you want to live in the illusion of Kenny still has a little bit of control, great. This life that we're called to live is a life of 100% complete and utter surrender. And I know that sounds crazy. And what does it mean to surrender? It means giving up the illusion that you're in control, because you're not, because then your peace just goes, because I'm in control and I forecasted my budget and I forecasted all the clients I'm going to get. And then none of that happens. And then my peace is gone. And Jesus is inviting us into partnership, into a place of not controlling. And so again, we're all control freaks and we're addicted to control.
I tell people that I'm a recovering control freak. I've used that joke. I think I said that today earlier. And of course, like in the integrative Enneagram, the eights, which I am, are called the active controller. Now, the funny thing is, I feel like a big part of what I get to offer people is teaching them how to take agency over their life, that they do have more control, like they're not victims.
Yeah.
So I want them to flip the other switch, but maybe it's because I swung into the other ditch. Something interesting came to mind as you were talking about that in terms of substance use and addiction, is saying, I want, like, my earlier question is basically like, how could I use enough alcohol or drugs and still be high functioning? Like, how could I not give it up and use just the right amount that I could tolerate without actually having to quit and lead my life differently.
Yeah.
Which just makes me feel like an idiot, which is fine because that's how I learn.
And the world is selling us that. That is this fear-based, you still need to be in control. We're just going to figure out how your life is spinning out of control, and we're just going to keep enough guardrails up. But the problem is, and Kenny, the people that are in C12, a lot of them, what happens is, and even with an addict, there comes a breaking point. Something breaks and you wake up. Your marriage falls apart. Your health falls apart. Your business has a massive thing. And at some point, as James says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you face trials of various kinds. Like, we're going to go through the fire, and we're going to have a come to Jesus moment and realize I'm not in control, and I've got to give up control. And surrender is our superpower.
Yeah.
And it takes time.
And sadly, I think that you'll go through multiple of those moments. Because we're all thick-headed.
Yeah, and it's a journey. I think we sell people short. This last 120 years of Christianity has been boiled down to, let's get someone to say a prayer. Okay, you believe Jesus, say this prayer, get baptized, great. You got your ticket to heaven, and now figure it out. But man, Jesus invited us into discipleship, into abiding in him, into this whole relationship. And it's a journey, and it's a hard-fought. One of the quotes I love from Dennis Peacock, who he talks about the earth, that this earth is our workshop, where we're not just managing results, we're maturing for eternity. So when I'm coaching CEOs and talking to them and trying to get them to see the picture, the only thing that echoes into eternity, the only thing that's going to be there are people. And most of our operating systems, the way we do business, is all about the bottom line. It's all about profit and how do we make more money and how do we cut all this and all of that. And what God has invited us into is, if you'll take care of my people within your company. I was meeting with an apartment guy this morning who has 3,500 units. And I'm like, when you sit on the Bema seat of Christ one day, one of the questions Jesus will ask you is, you had 3,500 people living in these apartments that you rented to them. Is your greatest value that I can put another countertop in there and paint it and make it look pretty and charge a higher rent and get a better investment, better return for my investors? Or is it, what did I do with these people that I had living in these communities that I owned and managed? Did I present the gospel to them? Did I disciple them? Did I put programs on for them? Do we care more about them and their souls than we do about the stupid color of the countertop and them having some granite so we can charge them more money? If we would look at things differently and take care of people, because people are God's highest value, then he would bless us. But we're stuck in, I'm addicted to my control, I'm addicted to making money, and I want more, and I'll use people to get it, versus if I blessed people. This is the whole Abrahamic covenant. God said to Abraham, I'm going to bless you so you can be a blessing to others. And that's what God's trying to get us to tune into is, if you'll bless my people, if you'll take care of them, if you'll look at them through the eyes of eternity, I will open up the floodgates of heaven and you won't be able to receive. And so,
yeah, there's, I go through this with some of my own clients, and I'm sure you've heard it hundreds of times. Taking it even out of the realm of just like in customers, if you're a leader of an organization and you have 5 people, 50, 500, 5,000.
Yep.
The company that comes to mind that some of this is based on that I've heard is from Chick-fil-A. They said, our people are our first customer. If we take care of them, of our people in our stores, they'll take care of the customers that come through, and they'll want to come back, and then our customers will take care of us. So it's like a virtuous flywheel.
Yep. Yes.
Talk a little bit about that move from, I'm focused on the bottom line, exclusively. I'm not saying take your eyes off of your financial things. Like, yeah, there's also biblical scripture about who sets out to do a thing without calculating the cost. That's dumb. But talk about starting to look more at who people are becoming than what they're doing in your business. And because that could feel really counterintuitive. No, customer's number one. I got to do that. I got to meet them. I got to get close. I got to understand. I got to do this. And I'm not saying, at least I don't believe, like, you just totally dismissed that. But where's the domino you want to push over? It doesn't make anything unimportant, but I think you might need to elevate the importance of something. Because if you get this right, then the other things start to take care of themselves, which is a lot less pressure to perform in that case, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great question. And for everyone, it's different. I'll say it this way, and this is from my pastoral side of being a pastor in a church, and I see this in businesses. What the leader has walked through and been through sets the tone for the company. So let's say we have a church and we have a pastor, a lead pastor, who's never been through addiction or anything like that. They're probably dismissive of any kind of recovery programs in the church. They don't understand it because they've never walked through it, right? But you have people inside the church that are hurting. You have people that are addicted to porn, alcohol, cheating on their spouses, all of that. Then you typically have a pastor who's never had a job, never done anything, and they don't have a value for all of that. Same thing in a company. So I feel like this hinge point moment is doing some evaluation on, God wants to take you through a process. It's like me building my C12 business. They told me this from the beginning. You're going to walk through things because God is trying to form something in you, because the leaders that he's going to assign to you to steward and help coach, you're going to have needed to walk through some stuff. So it's like boot camp. We're going to put you through some things. So when you get in the middle of the war, you have muscle memory on what to do when the bullets start flying. So I think as CEOs of people who have stood up and said, I'm going to be a leader, whatever position I'm in, submitting to the process and this surrender and understanding.
There was something that came to mind when you were talking about, oh, there it is. There's the thought. You talked about going through things that are going to form you.
Yep.
And that's a thought I haven't fully explored. So this is a barely baked thought for me too. So I don't actually have an angle per se here, but talk about formation and leadership and formation, because I think most of the times when we talk about formation, I'm saying it a lot, and that's weird. It is in the inside of the context of a church, or we talk about discipleship or spiritual formation, which is typically not something talked about in evangelical circles. That's something I come across and am a fan of. And I've had a lot of thoughts around addressing leadership as formation.
Mm-hmm.
And you just brought that up. So you're like only the second person other than me that I've really heard talk about that. Can you talk about what that means in and of itself? And then how could that start to shape how leaders both see themselves and see their people?
I just want to say high level, there is no cookie cutter. There is no, it's like I've got three teenage daughters. There's no cookie cutter thing I could do for them that would work for the other. We know that. And that's why I stay high level. But again, we're operating out of performance and out of fear and kingdom leadership, and then we're measuring output. But kingdom leadership and what God is doing inside of kingdom leaders, that's Christians who have said yes, who said, I don't believe in the sacred versus secular divide. I believe that my work is holy. I believe that God put me here to work and to do that, and that is holy. And it's not just for me to make money and to give back to a nonprofit or a church or something good, but actually the work that I'm doing and the people I'm leading is absolutely holy, sacred ground. So kingdom leadership it's not about output. It's about formation. It's about everything God puts you through is to form something inside of you. And what is that formation? It's to make you look like Jesus. Our whole goal in this whole thing of 70 to 80, 90 years of life is, how has Christ been formed in us? Mm-hmm. Do we look more like him than we did yesterday or last year? Or like we talked about earlier, Randy 1.0, Kenny 1.0, whatever. Jesus is trying. We've been invited to something bigger and better.
But just like you were saying with like your three girls, the path, like formation is happening. The principles of formation are the same, but the path of formation looks different for each person.
Yes.
How can we, and as I'm starting to think through how that gets applied, it start to play a role, an active role, because I like going back to what you were saying about we partner with Jesus in this. So it's not, again, a Carrie Underwood song where Jesus just takes the wheel, although sometimes I wish he would. But if we're being honest, but how do we partner and start to be an active participant in our own formation? And then as leaders start to play an active role in the formation of those we lead without trying to play God or Jesus or anything like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm going to paint two pictures real quick. I'm in a recovery group on Monday nights, and being an Enneagram 7 who runs from pain, runs to joy and all the stuff, I dislike people's lives falling apart in pain, and you keep making the wrong decisions, and here's where you are, and sitting in the pain. And so one of the greatest revelations I've had that the Holy Spirit has had to work on me is, Randy, I know you want this, and I want joy for your life, because joy is in his presence, we have fullness of joy. But the inverse is, you'll experience more joy when you sit in your pain, when you sit in those uncomfortable moments, and don't try to figure it out, and don't medicate, and don't try to recontrol the situation, and do all of that, but you let me do my deep work, and then me and you will come out of this together instead of you just medicating and controlling and solving your own problems and coming out of it. Mm-hmm. So recovery keeps me in that, connected to the brokenness of humanity. And then the crazy thing is, I'm in my C12 groups where I'm with people that are massively successful. They make really good decisions in all of that. And I feel sorry for them because they have problems, and their problem is they have enough money to fix their problem. Their problem is their family's going to fix their problem. Their problem is they went to Wharton or Yale or Stanford or wherever they went, and I've got enough friends to fix every problem I have. And I just want to slap them in the face and say, I wish you could be in a place. And this is what I think, this is what Jesus was crying out when he showed up on the earth, and he said, blessed are the brokenhearted, blessed are the poor in spirit. I am going to meet them. And we live in this culture where, and same thing, we used to go to Brazil and do all these healing crusades, and we come back and we've seen the blind healed and the deaf and all the stuff. And then you come back to America and it's like, why aren't we seeing that here? Because we are addicted to solving our own problems. We've never been at a place where we have no medical care. We have no solutions. The only solution is that Jesus shows up and he fixes our problem, or I die. But we live in a culture where we can fix it all.
Propped up.
Absolutely. So I can fix it. And God in his mercy is trying to get us all to these moments in our lives where we would be blessed enough to be in a position where we cannot fix where we've gotten ourselves. I wish that happened at salvation, and sometimes it does, but then the journey of sanctification comes in, where now he's sanctifying us and growing us up and maturing us and doing all of those things. The question, again, it begs of, am I going to continue to control my own life and run it? Or with every little problem that comes up, would I take a moment to invite the Holy Spirit in? Would I take a moment to pray? Lord, this problem just came up, and every problem is a new possibility for heaven to invade what's happening here. Where are you, and what do you want to do? What's your wisdom? Because I know how I could solve this problem, and I know what I could do. What's heaven's agenda for this thing?
I think I need to go for a walk at this point and just go think. Very well said. If there's a leader listening to this, especially those that would see the world through the lens of faith, and that could even be something different than the Christian faith. I had a great conversation with somebody recently. They just said, and they shared our faith, but they said, there's just something different when you start to talk to somebody who their faith becomes that lens by which they see the world, even if it's something totally different.
Yeah.
If that person's listening and saying, you know what, I want to step into the 2.0, and maybe you're a 3.0, 4.0, whatever you're trying to get to, or your next stage, and you've already gone through some things. How do we start to make that choice or create the margin? It's almost like we have to create a little bit of margin so that more margin can be created.
Yeah.
What's a baby step someone could take in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money, to step into that and maybe experience that, build that indestructible, unconditional sort of peace, or I would say more accurately, receive that peace?
Yeah. I'll just give you what I do and what I try to get, what I coach to do is just when we're in those moments of, I'll call them a little bit of moments of clarity or conviction, or you feel something. And I'm a big feeler, so I know a lot of CEOs aren't feelers or whatever, but just what's not sustainable in my life? What's not eternal? What have I said yes to that's just not what I'm supposed to do? One of the things I made a note earlier when I was thinking about this, but shifting from this mentality for building empires to just stewarding assignments. And to me, like we talked about earlier, we're trying to break this down into our life is full of seasons. Met with a CEO a couple of weeks ago, and they're talking about scaling and doing all of this. And my question to them is, man, all right, your wife just had a baby 6 months ago, and you've got three kids under five at home, and you want to scale your business. Can your family handle what you're about to go through? Because this is not just about you. It's about your kids in the season that you need to be there for them. Mm-hmm. And what's not sustainable? What season am I in life? What's God inviting me to? And again, pressing in our marriages, like where are we at? Is my marriage healthy? It's the same thing. Like I'll get CEOs and they'll join C12. And the first thing they want to do is take all their employees on a mission trip to Africa and start giving all this money away. And it's the same. And it's, hold on, time out. How's your marriage? How's your parenting? How's your health? How's your personal finances? Like I take them through this personal balance wheel of how are you doing? And then how are your employees doing? Are they getting paid enough? We have right people, right seat, right bus. Are we creating an environment for them? Because the worst thing you can do is come home from a conference. And you know this, Kenny, you come home from a conference and you try to tell your wife all the stuff you learned. She's like, dude, I'm filing for divorce next week. You suck as a husband. You're like, but I have all these great ideas. And she's, I just want a date night once a week. And I just want you to sit down and do the budget I've been asking you to work on. And all of those things. Sorry, I'm getting personal, Kitty, and my apologies. Okay.
Nah,
and then what am I pretending not to know? I love that question. I have a coach ask me that all the time. Randy, what are you pretending not to know? And it's one of those where it's like the way it's asked is like, dude, what am I pretending not to know? And then I love
Dadgum. That's a good one.
So I ask myself those questions. What's not sustainable? What's not eternal? What am I pretending not to know? And then again, we talked about this earlier, but where is there a friction point in my life? And where am I trying to understand my way to peace instead of just receiving peace from Jesus? Like, where is that? And then I name it, and then I share it, so I'm not carrying it alone. So inviting people in. So like today when I had lunch with the CEO, he's like, how are you doing? And I just sit and think for a second, and he's like, I already like your answer because you're not going to give me the BS. I'm doing fine.
I'm more than blessed, brother.
Yeah, I'm like, man, and he's, thank you at the end of the lunch. Thank you for this conversation. Dude, all I'm in spreadsheets, I'm in predictions and calculations and all this stuff all day. And none of us are talking about our hearts and our souls and where we're at and all that stuff.
I love that. Rainey, certainly I think we planted the seed for some sort of mini series or something like that. But I look forward to it, baby.
Here we go. Journey.
We're about to embark. But if people want to know more about you, C12, your groups, anything else you're involved in, how can they follow up, get connected? And
I think LinkedIn's a great place. Connect with me on there. I think you're throwing out my email on there. Yeah,
we'll drop all of those into the show notes. So if you want to reach out to Randy, we have website, LinkedIn, and email. And then if there's anything else you want to mention.
Yeah. And I would just say I had a good conversation with someone who wasn't a CEO, wasn't a C-suite person. There's a pretty big void right now for people that which just sounds crazy to say it, but that are just working full time in a job, do middle management, something. We're just working. The church is not really affirming us. We're not really hearing any of that. Where do people get connected? And so I have some really good organizations that I love to connect people with, just depending, because we're very specific. Like C12 is, you got to be a CEO, you got to have this many employees, and you got to have this much revenue. And so we're pretty specific on who we're called to reach, but there are other organizations out there that if anyone's, man, I'm just a middle manager at Cisco, and I'd love to have some other believers around me because my company's woke and stupid. Love to help connect people in that way because I feel like we all need community and people that are thinking the same way, going through the same stuff that we're going through, because the enemy loves to isolate us and tell us we're the only one.
Yep. It's a pretty good playbook. And you started with it, keeps running it.
Yeah.
And I love that you have some of those organizations. It's actually something a mentor of mine and I have been discussing a lot, is just hearing the need for and the vacuum of middle management resources to train, to connect, to level up the same way the C-suite gets. And not that one should replace the other, but just is what's the appropriate level, right time, right fit sort of thing. So, Randy, thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us and dropping some wisdom. I expected nothing less. And so we'll look forward to having another episode with you. And to the listeners, thank you so much for spending part of your day with me and Randy. We hope that this was powerful and engaging and entertaining for you, because who wants to listen to a boring podcast? Not me, because I'm on it. So I also don't want to fall asleep in the middle of the interview. That'd be awkward and maybe a little rude. But if you enjoyed this, please engage, rate, review, subscribe, whatever the right button is, so that you get notified whenever new episodes get out. Also, it is a free and easy way for you to help others like you stumble across this content. You never know what conversation could help unlock someone's next step in their leadership journey. And that'll just give you the warm and fuzzies inside, or maybe you'll get a high five when you get to heaven. I don't know how it all works, but do it. It's the right thing to do. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you live. We'll see you.